I've mentioned before that how surprising it is, really not surprising, but kind of unique that Jason and I have a tendency to pick out similar things. I do tell him the sermon topic, the text, and usually at most a sentence, but I frequently will think of a song or a passage, and it's kind of startling sometimes that he's already chosen those things. Our invitation song this morning is like that. This passage that we just read is the one I'm going to close with this morning. But sometimes it doesn't work out really well. And I should have thought of this before I got up here, before I made plans for this. My introduction is the question, what's the most popular chapter in the Old Testament? And we've already given it away because we just sang the song, The Lord is My Shepherd. The 23rd Psalm, by a large margin, is the most popular chapter in the Old Testament. And I think what's really unique about that is that this passage has kind of developed a usage that's a little bit morbid, I guess is the word. Where do you hear the 23rd Psalm mostly? At funerals, yeah. Most conservative ministers are going to use the 23rd Psalm at the internment, at the graveside. When I was reading Burton Kaufman's comments about this particular chapter, he says that he performed more than 100 funerals in 1937. That's two a week. And he said at every single one of them, he read the 23rd Psalm. I'm going to read it again because I want to point out something that's really useful to us. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. When I was a child, I really had trouble with that because it sounded like you didn't want the shepherd. And later on, when you understand commas and grammar, it makes a little more sense. But originally, I can remember as a child saying, why do we read that passage about not wanting that shepherd? He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. He guides me in the path of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You have anointed my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. The passage the portion that I'd like to look at this morning is that he restores my soul. A lot of things can be restored. I don't know if you've ever restored an old house. When we moved to Guthrie in 1986, we put a bid in on a house that we wanted to restore. The people lived in California and we never could get a price. 31 years later, when I drive by that house, it is still being restored. And I'm so glad that I don't own it. That would not have been a fun thing to do. But you see people that just make these, you know, tremendous jobs of maybe it's expensive, but it certainly turns out beautifully. Cars. Anybody here a car restorer? We have a car restorer in the congregation. Sid Droppel is an incredible man at doing this. He restored a 67 Mustang convertible for his wife for Christmas one year, and it truly is amazing. Maybe you need your health restored. This little girl looks like she could use some help there. Then there are all kinds of other things that need to be restored. Our relationships, your wealth, your health, your finances, all kinds of things. Sometimes people talk about having their rights restored. And so the list just literally becomes endless. But David says about God in Psalms 23, he restores my soul. And think about what that means. Your soul can be restored. Now, there's a lot of argument about when David writes the 23rd Psalm. And I don't think anybody can say conclusively at what time period that occurred. Some people just really fight hard that this is an early psalm written when David was still a shepherd boy. Others say, no, it reflects a mature point of view. And I certainly have more personal tendency toward the latter view. Because David would have experienced that restoration when, after the affair with Bathsheba and after the killing of Uriah and the other things that were associated with that, when Nathan makes it clear to him that he's the guy who's done all this, he goes and prays and asks God to restore his soul. Passage that we'll look at just a few minutes. It's a wonderful blessing to know that God can restore our souls. It's even more powerful to know that he will. Well, what are the things, what are the different areas, what are the different ways, what are the different applications of restoring our soul? The first thing I'd like for us to think about, it, and I think this is what we typically think about, is he restores us from sin. We sin. We bring that sin to God. We confess that sin. The blood of Jesus washes that sin away, but our soul is restored. We have a new opportunity. And what a wonderful feeling that is. Several times in ministry, I've baptized someone and had them come back months later or sometimes even years later and say, I want to be baptized again. Well, why? Well, I want to feel like I felt at that moment. It was such a wonderful experience to come up out of that water and feel like all of my sin is gone. All of it is washed away. I don't have to carry that anymore. It's just an incredible blessing. And I want to have that experience. I want to feel that. And it's so hard to communicate. You can have that all the time. It's an ongoing situation. Your soul is constantly being restored. But we look at the sinful things we do in this life. We look at the ways we hurt other people. We look at all the things that we do wrong and those weigh down on us so much that we just feel like, how could God be dealing with that? How could that be actually taken away? And yet it can be. David begs. And this Psalm 51 is definitely after the Bathsheba sin. Create in me a pure heart, O God, and renew a steadfast spirit within me. Do not cast me from your presence or take your Holy Spirit from me. Restore to me the joy of your salvation, and grant me a willing spirit to sustain me. Restore the joy of your salvation. David recognized his sin. David confessed his sin. David took his anguish to God. And David is described in a description that applies even after this time as a man after God's own heart. How could that happen? I think it has very much to do with the fact that he recognizes, he acknowledges his sin, and he asks God to take that sin away. He's willing to confess that sin, and he's willing to own up to it. We have a really difficult time with this because we don't look enough at David's story. We read the pleadings of David. David is pleading with God to have this sin taken away. We also, if we look carefully at David's story, we recognize that there were consequences for his behavior. There were earthly consequences. And those consequences were not taken away. The child did die. War did come from David's own house. The blood that was on David's hand continues through all of his reign. The things that were given to David were there. They continued. And the same thing happens for us. We say, well, I want to have my soul restored, and I want all this stuff to go away. And God says, the consequences of physical sin don't go away. The payment for sin goes away, but the loss that we've experienced or the complication that it creates in our lives. And on a day-to-day basis, all of us deal with the consequences of our sin. And it causes us to feel like, well, it's still here. But it isn't. It's been taken away from us. It's been restored. The penalty isn't there anymore. It's been removed. And what a renewing and invigorating reality that ought to be for all of us. The second way I think that God restores our soul is we just get tired. I've mentioned to several of you, and I'm actually mentioned this in a Devo on a Sunday afternoon. I'm aware of several elderly people who are abandoning their faith. One particular lady that I've been close to for a very long time is just throwing in the towel. She's in her late 80s, and she's quitting. Why? Well, she's just worn out. She's weary, and she just can't go on any longer, and so she's literally quitting. I hope that maybe there's some intervention there, and I hope there's things that can be different in her life, but she's not the only person that that's happening to. There are people that live long Christian lives only to get tired, and we wear out. There are so many demands and so many responsibilities that we get to the place where we just aren't able or don't want to continue. Went on a trip one time to Six Flags. One of the ladies there had her three children with her. One of the kids woke up the first morning and he had gum in his hair. Another child had a problem, and as the third child had a problem, and she said, "I don't want to be a mom anymore. You know, I quit. I resign." Well, she didn't get to do that. As Christians, though, people actually do quit. They resign. And there are moments when the heaviness of what we're doing and the difficulty of what we're doing can really overwhelm us. Galatians chapter 6, verse 9. "Let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest if we do not give up." How Satan delights at taking a person away in the very last phase of their Christian experience. Or even at other phases, but particularly there. And the thing that's so true about this is that it's not only the person, but there are always other people that are impacted by that as well. There's family members and people that have looked up to that person and people who've gone to that person for advice. And over again, it's such an accomplishment for Satan. This passage says just hang in there. And if we can go and find from God this restoration of our soul, that prayer or that meditation, that activity that helps us feel a bit revived and a bit renewed. Isaiah chapter 40, verse 31. "But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint." And 2 Corinthians 4, 16. "Therefore, we do not lose heart. Though outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we are being renewed day by day." Feels like life is just taking us, literally drawing the life out of us. And the passage says, but we're being renewed in our spirit. If you were to travel to Israel, you could go to En Gedi, which is a wadi, an oasis in the desert. If you go to that place, the neat thing about it is that David was actually here. David was actually walking in that dirt, in that water, at a much earlier point in time. You can imagine David as a fugitive, going to this beautiful place and taking rest and respite there. And sometimes we do need a rest. We do need a respite. We do need a break so that we can once again mount up like eagles. And we can be useful, we can be helpful, we can be encouraging to each other across that process. The third way that our spirit can be restored is from the damage that comes in our lives. I wouldn't ask for a show of hands, but this morning I think if I were to say, how many of you have been hurt by somebody else? Probably everybody's hand would go up. The sad part about it is, if I were to say, how many of you have been hurt by your Christian brethren? Multitude of hands would be up. We unfortunately are imperfect, and we unfortunately make mistakes. And those mistakes damage and harm other people over a long period of time, or maybe even not a long period of time, but they have a tendency to mount up, to become cumulative. And that can really be distressful for all of us. 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 2 says, "Such teachings come through hypocritical liars whose consciences have been seared as with a hot iron." Misuse over and over again creates scar tissue which no longer works and functions. And I think our soul can be damaged in that same way if we let it. When we have these things happen to us, they're difficult to deal with. God cares about your brokenheartedness. He cares when you're wounded. He cares when you're hurt. There may be people that have abandoned you. There may be people who have died and gone on. And those are things that are painful in your life. But God can bind up and heal that brokenness. I'm going to go on to Psalms 34, verse 1. The Lord is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit. There are moments when we feel like my spirit is broken, my spirit is crushed. And God is there to help us and lift us and to assist us across that process. I read a story years ago about two men who were reading the 23rd Psalm. One of them was a great orator, a professional actor. And he got up and presented the 23rd Psalm, and people were just amazed at the job that he had done. Second man was just an average, ordinary guy. He got up there and shared the 23rd Psalm, and there was no contest. The second guy did such a better job. And people didn't understand. And one person put it this way: the first guy knew the psalm. The second guy knew the shepherd. And when we know the shepherd, when we're connected to the shepherd, we understand what the shepherd not only can do, but what he wants to do for us in our lives. We can be restored. And I don't care what you're dealing with today, that can be restored. I don't care what you've done, that can be restored. We have this incredible gift that's been given to us that allows us to experience restoration. Many of you may be familiar with the World War II squadron, the Lost Squadron, that was going through the northern part of the Atlantic. In 1942, there were six P-38s and two B-17s that were forced to land. The pilots were rescued, but the aircraft were left there. Later, when they went back, years later, they tried to find those aircraft and couldn't. Where had they gone? Well, in 1988, they found that they were 264 feet into the ice. Ice had covered them over. And in 1992, they pulled one of them out of there and worked on it. That's what it looked like when it came out of the ice. This has been nicknamed Glacier Girl. And Glacier Girl now flies. They were able to put her back into the sky. You can even go to air shows and see Glacier Girl, and a lot of people have done that. It's an incredible testament to man that something could, like that could actually happen, could actually occur. And when we look at that, we're just a little bit amazed that that can take place. But when we look at what God can do and what God has to offer, then we begin to understand how much more incredible His power is available to us. The other interesting thing is sometimes the restored version is better than the original. And that's true in our lives, and that's true in our souls as well. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 10, we've already read it. And the God of all grace, who called you to His eternal glory in Christ, after you have suffered a little while, will Himself restore you and make you strong, firm, and steadfast. That's what God can do. He may choose not to do it in this life. It may be in the next life. But wherever He chooses to do that, the power that He has is available to you. And that experience is ours to have. This morning, we're going to sing that song, Restore My Spirit, Lord. It's a great song. And if your spirit needs to be restored, then we invite you to do whatever you need to do to make that happen. It may mean that you need to spend more prayer time. It may mean that you need to spend more time with God. It may mean that you need to meditate more. You may need to interact. You may need some accountability. If you find yourself in a place where you need to do something public, though, we'd be glad to help you with that while we sing this song together.